The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 691 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show. Thank you so much for joining us for this week in an exciting, thrilling, action-packed week of Sony news. There has just been so much to contend with because it'll all get announced after this week's episode, probably. So we'll deal with it next week. But before we get to, you know, some interesting topics I think we have to discuss this week, I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Hello, I'm just don't waste any more time on me. Just let's get right to the big news. It's
right,
huge.
Right to the news. And we're also joined this week, of course, by Lucy O'Brien.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for keeping it short, staccato, right to the news. And of course, the news is I have the Cheers theme song stuck in my head and I can't
huge.
Get rid of it.
Yeah. Which is you can watch that on PlayStation Video for the next few weeks until
August. Yeah.
Service goes away.
That's a talking point now in like the pandemic times. Like that's the type of way we make conversation. I realized the other day that I have two stories. Like in the whole year, I've got like two stories. I tweeted this out. One is learning to make pasta, and the other is that I met a very friendly squirrel. And that's it. That's all I've got. That is like my entire sort of social output.
I'll be honest with you. Second story, not a lot to work with. First story, I could talk to you for hours. That would be a great day. You know, you and I could just talk about like new, just different types of pie. I'm a big, huge fan of bucatini, personally. It's like a fat spaghetti. Really good stuff.
Okay, and you're going to teach me some of your tricks.
I'm a big squirrel guy, so this all works out in the end. Well, we have both stories covered.
You got a whole weekend.
Yeah. No, Lucy, I'll be honest. Most of my stories have been telling my girlfriend your tweets because I find them so funny. And I'll be like, have you seen this one? And then that's the rest of our evening.
That's over. Very sad.
welcome to these times. Anyway, thank you all so much for joining us. For anyone who is watching, just briefly wanted to mention on YouTube, of course, we're on the IGN Games channel currently, no longer on the Podcast Beyond channel. If you're still subscribed over there, make sure you're subscribed here. We'll have a Beyond playlist going. You'll be able to just tune in for Beyond if that's all you really want. But I encourage you checking out the other shows because there's a lot of great, thoughtful conversations happening there, including like on shows like Podcast Unlocked, which Brian was on this week.
I cheated on you guys. I'm sorry.
It's all right. You're also on MVC most weeks, so you're just running the full gamut this week, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Brian, I appreciate it. Of course, there probably will be some crossover and discussion, so I'm curious to hear what your talking points will be. But yeah, let's jump right into. I think
you're jealous. You sound a little jealous.
No, they have the big news, but I think it's worth talking about from a little bit of a different context because I think ever since this story was first teased as a possibility, the console wars ensued when you shouldn't really be putting your whole life's worth assigned to a company that just wants to make money from you. But we of course learned that the Microsoft acquisition of Bethesda has fully gone through. It is, you know, the legal logistical nightmares of it have happened. They worked through it and they are now part of the Xbox family. We don't really have any more info about whether or not Bethesda games will be exclusives other than the news today sort of reiterating what Phil Spencer said months ago, which was it'll be a case by case basis. There will be some exclusives, some not. My presumption is just to sort of get it out of the way, like ongoing games like Fallout 76 and Elder Scrolls Online that are already on PlayStation and other places, those are going to stay there. I don't think they're going to yank those games away from players who are already playing them. But of course, this opens up the future potential for things like Starfield and the Elder Scrolls 6 and all of these things. And I did want to start sort of from a more Sony focused perspective. And I do want to talk about this quite rationally. I think we all understand, like, at the end of the day, this is a business move. Microsoft has, we've talked about it on the show for a long time, had the problem of not having first party games to put out to tout on their platforms. Doing this ensures they have another 10 studios to be able to do that with. They're obviously going to make some games exclusive, but the thing that I want to start with is, and Lucy, I'll start with you. Do you feel like Sony needs to do anything in the immediate future to counteract this news? Like, do they really need to bring attention back to PlayStation in any way, or is attention not really been gone, do you think, because of this news?
I mean, you know, I'll just reiterate what I've always said. Like, I still think that Sony has the best first party stable of the pair. I think that Sony's reputation for delivering incredibly, like, polished first party AAA games is unrivaled. You know, I don't think that there needs to be any kind of immediate moves. Obviously, there's always stuff going on in the background, but, like, I don't think there needs to be any kind of, I mean, there shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction to any big business decision anyway, right? Like, but yeah, I think Sony's still in a good place and still holds that crown for being, you know, it's what the sort of Nintendo seal of quality kind of used to stand for. When Sony pushes out a first-party game, you know that it's going to be something, and I don't think that there's, you know, they're going to let anything through of a lesser quality really these days. So, you know, I think there are pros and cons of both. They're just an even playing field. It's a game of two halves.
Yeah. And Brian, of course, granted, I knew you, even with your cheating on us this week, of course, and getting honestly their inside perspective, of course, we love you too. You know, I haven't been able to listen to that episode of Unlocked, but I am curious from your end, like, Where do you see the Sony of it all with this news? Because I do think, obviously, this every time we post about this on IGN, like, the audience is really interested in seeing this acquisition happen. And Bethesda is home to huge games, but it is helping Microsoft catch up. Is definitely what it feels like.
Yeah, no, totally. This news is interesting today because it sort of reiterates what we knew already, right? Like, it kind of feels like two people we knew got engaged a couple months ago, and then today we got married. And then what old people do on a wedding day is they're always like, "Where's the babies? When are you gonna have kids?" And we're just like, maybe let's give them a day. I will say, though, in the grand scheme of thing, like, in the long term here, I'm not sure exactly how this will pan out, but I know that as soon as the end of this week, new Bethesda games will be appearing on Game Pass. And so that is, once again, and I've said this for years, I love Game Pass as a service that is getting increasingly better and better and better. And it's something that I think that Sony needs to increasingly take notice to. Do they need their own version of it? No, but I think they're best way to counteract in the interim, or at least the short term, is to do what they did on PlayStation Plus this month. Knock out a bunch of awesome games, put a bunch of games on that service, bolster that service value, make people who are paying for it feel like they're getting something great for it. So otherwise, eyes are going to start to wander a little bit, right? Like, I think people will start looking into different directions. I don't think they're going to abandon the PlayStation ecosystem for Xbox just because PS Plus had a couple of bad months or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that if it's going to take months or years for this Bethesda, ZeniMax, Microsoft thing to, like, truly bear fruit, or babies, wherever you want to go with the metaphor here, baby trees, then I do want them to sort of go, okay, well, they're getting new Game Pass games constantly. What does our service have? What can we do to compete with that? How do we get the attention of fans and make them feel like the thing they're paying for every single month, that they're paying for already in droves, millions of people are paying for PS Plus, make that better and better and better every single month. And so I think that's how they react. In terms of the grand scheme, Lucy nailed it. Like, this is, PlayStation doesn't necessarily have to worry. This is Microsoft filling in a bunch of blanks in their catalog that they needed to fill in, and I'm really happy they're doing it. But PlayStation has, you know, several, like, half a dozen studios working in unison right now, just firing on all cylinders, making great games all the time. So I think that's important too.
Yeah, it's that thing that I think we've said it before a lot on the show, but it's worth echoing that, like, at the end of the day, both of these companies doing well only benefits all of us. At the end of the day, if they're both putting out a fantastic lineup, they're going to try to compete with each other to have a better lineup. And we're going to see them, whether it's acquisitions or, you know, exclusivity deals or things like that. Obviously, the how and why we get those things are definitely up for discussion, but they're going to keep pushing one another essentially to try to outdo each other. And we're the ones who benefit from that because we get, a continuous stream of great games. Ryan McCaffrey and I interviewed Matt Booty over on the Xbox side a couple years ago at E3 when that was a thing. And we were talking about the acquisitions with him, and he was sort of talking along the lines of, like, to them, a lot of their past studio acquisitions were with Game Pass in mind, as you were saying, Brian. Like, their hope was, you know, in time they could have a new first party Game Pass game every quarter or so, like in the same way that, you know, Netflix has right now. Netflix is putting out a new movie every month for this year, or every week for this year, practically.
HBO Max, same deal, right? One big movie every month.
Every month. Game Pass is designed, they're trying to design their first party stable to allow for a similar output on a game scale. Now, obviously, every game won't be a Elder Scrolls size game. They're going to have smaller games, some Groundeds with Avowed, and, you know, like Forza Horizons, and then smaller games like a Battletoads. Like, we'll see that there, but that's what their goal is. PlayStation doesn't have that goal. They're very much, they have their studios, and when their games are ready to come out, those games are going to come out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're totally right. You can't really predict what's going to be on PS Plus in November. Right. Yeah. Like, it was actually interesting recently because we started getting announcements for games months ahead of time, like Destruction All-Stars. It's cool to know, like, this is a game we're going to get 3 months from now on PS Plus, because I think for a lot of people, they subscribe on a month to month basis. These services are expensive. It's easy to get free codes for a month or like some cheap deal for, you know, just on Game Pass, especially, like, there's like 10-day, 14-day codes all the time included with games. Like, I think it's good to have an idea of what to expect. And we don't necessarily have that on the PlayStation side, mostly because they don't really drag and drop their first party games onto PS Plus ever, nor should they really. I don't feel like they need to. They are market leaders and crushing it on MPD constantly every time, like, they put out AAA first party games. But it would be cool to have some sort of idea of, like, what does the rest of this year look like for the service I'm paying for, which I think you are getting with Netflix and you are getting with HBO Max, and even Disney Plus is sort of giving you a slight roadmap of, like, what you can expect to see down the line.
It feels like PS Plus, you know, I'm sure it's like any service, it's ever evolving, but it feels like it's kind of having a slight identity crisis. Like, it seems very scattershot. It seems very sort of, as you say, like, not particularly focused. And certainly in terms of communication, you know, of those who own that service, like, there's not a lot of communication there. So, you know, I think that is definitely the sort of the right space for Sony to be looking, because they've got everything else kind of wrapped up in a nice little bow, you know? Yeah. And this is an area of growth for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely something I think we saw, you know, not as dramatic, I want to say, compared to Game Pass Rise, but there was a pretty healthy bump, I believe, in PlayStation Plus subscribers over the last year, you know, during the pandemic and everything. And obviously, people look to that. They look to being able to have these, because at the end of the day, they're not free games. You are paying, as Brian was saying, like, month to month or year to year. And so you want that investment to eke out. And yeah, of course, we're not going to get God of War Ragnarok or Horizon Forbidden West day one on PlayStation Plus. That's just not going to happen. You know, Destruction All-Stars makes sense because it's a multiplayer game. It's a new IP. They want to, you know, get an install base there. But I totally agree. I think they need to be making more inroads, because even if PlayStation Plus and Game Pass aren't the same, they're often viewed in a similar, like, are my dollars going toward a value that makes sense as a player? And I do think they need to keep building PlayStation Plus. I still think they should integrate PlayStation Now in some way, like sort of taking Game Pass Ultimate. I think if you combine those two services for a reduced price, like, you'd probably get a lot more PlayStation Now players.
Right. There's also, like, one of the things we're kind of negating here, and for good reason, is the PS Plus collection, which is an awesome feature currently paywalled behind a console the average consumer can't purchase. And so I think once people get their hands on PS5 and they get to that collection, and assuming that collection grows over time, we haven't really heard anything about that.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that's a really great incentive right there. But the millions of people on PS4 are not experiencing that right now. That was to entice people to buy a PS5, which they seem enticed about since you can't buy one. Like the general idea is doesn't need any more enticing. They're sold out every second. And so, yeah, it's I hope that service grows, that side of the service grows, and I hope more people can get a PS5, period.
Yeah, it's really interesting that we haven't seen even like one game added since launch. I thought that was going to kind of be one where we'd maybe get like one or two more games a month or even, you know, every quarter just to kind of add and build. Because Jim Ryan, in his interview that he gave with GQ a couple weeks back that we talked about, I think he mentioned there, one in four people who got a PS5 didn't have a PS4. So that collection is really valuable to a quarter of the player base of PS5, which granted, you know, is only a million and a half right now, but that's obviously a dedicated player. And so I'm surprised they are not building into that. But Brian, you may be right in terms of like the people just want to figure out when they can get their hands on it. I don't think Sony's too worried about incentivizing people to buy a PlayStation 5 right now because they're already kind of incentivized. But yeah, we're in this interesting influx where I think, you know, there's a whole other side of it of like acquisitions by these major companies and the positives and negatives of them are also something to consider, because I don't think we're going to see PlayStation at any point in the near future spend $7 billion on acquiring a publisher. I just don't expect that to happen anytime soon. No. And obviously, you know, you can say like Bethesda will have more support from that Microsoft corporate side, which will hopefully lead to more stability for those devs and all these things. It does raise the question of how close are we getting to a monopolistic future like Disney and Disney Plus and everything. But as of right now, I don't foresee a huge change in the near future for PlayStation players with this news. Just like Brian, you were saying, it doesn't really change what we heard a few months ago. We're still going to get Deathloop. We're still going to get Ghostwire Tokyo as, you know, launch exclusives on PS5. I still believe we're going to get my money is on either Starfield or Elder Scrolls 6 still coming to PlayStation. At the end of the day, I think it would be, you know, don't get me wrong, they're buying them to get exclusives, but at the end of the day, it seems crazy not to put that money on the table, like to just get the PlayStation. I don't know how both of you feel. Like those are the two question marks I always see getting thrown around are, will those go platform exclusive? And at least for me, I think at least one of them is going to be on PlayStation. I don't know.
Weird chicken and the egg thing about all this, right? It's like, do you put your games multi-platform because you can make a lot of money instantly by selling tons of copies on PS4, PS5, and PC, or do you just keep them to one place so you can bring people over, which will eventually let them become, you know, Xbox console or Xbox ecosystem people forever? That's very tough. You know, I mean, if you look at, there was a tremendous backlash against that Tomb Raider exclusivity deal on the Xbox side a couple years ago. And I think that like that significantly held the sales of that game back. And like ultimately it went everywhere and people played it and they loved it. I enjoyed the hell out of that game. But I do think that that definitely damaged the impact that game had around launch, which is kind of a bummer. But things are different now. I think we're in a different world. Like I think there's a lot more goodwill behind Xbox this time around out the gate than there was last time. Not that I think, I know that for sure, because last time was really bad. That was a really bad launch year. And it kind of defined their trajectory for the rest of the console generation. And I think things are a lot better off now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm in two minds about it because, you know, on the one hand, it isn't just Xbox withholding games from PlayStation or whatever. It's Xbox and PC. Like, it's this is the thing, you know. Sometimes I'm like, do they need PlayStation 5?
Yeah.
Like, do they need, you know, you've got the whole Xbox family now, which is PC as well. That's a massive user base. You know, it's not just the Xbox, it's the PC as well. So, you know, I'm like, I would love it if you know, PlayStation owners got to experience those games in some way. And hopefully that will happen. It just, you know, I think that, you know, we need to think a little bit beyond just it being on Xbox, because it is
PC.
There's
also
a lot more to it, and that user base is a lot larger.
No, you're totally right. And it is that fascinating thing. I think for me, it would be like, if we're looking at the market as it is right now, it would seem like wild for such a big franchise to not appear on PlayStation, but we're also not going to be getting the Elder Scrolls 6 any like in the next year or two.
Right.
The market's going to change a lot. Like the thing I said a few months ago, to me, I still really believe is like, I think Phil Spencer is saying it's going to be a case by case basis because who knows how the next few years are going to turn out. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a bit more evenly matched on a sales note of like Xbox to PlayStation, and Xbox is measuring in a different way because of the Game Pass focus. And so, you know, if things are in a comfortable position for them, I definitely don't see a reason for them to put these things on Sony, because as you were saying, Lucy, they have PC and Xbox at the end of the day. You know, people who use xCloud on their phones, like there's a wide audience there that matters in a different way to them than if they were perhaps in the same position as they were toward the beginning of the Xbox One life cycle. That era Xbox, I could see very much still willing to put stuff on PlayStation, but now they acquired them for a reason.
I also like it. We're speculating this, but I think we're doing it because I don't think there is any sort of inherent value to them announcing, you know, planting the flag right now today. Starfield is exclusive. I don't know, like, if there would be a significant business advantage or opportunity to doing that today. The fact that it is sort of all speculation right now is a little crazy, because you sort of expect them to be like, well, here's why we did this, here are the plans, but it sounds a lot more open-ended than that. And I think that if you're just a PlayStation guy or girl, and you only have one of those consoles, then this didn't close the door on you forever today, right? The announcement was basically like case by case. Some things will be exclusive to Xbox, some things won't, so you know, there's a chance. It does seem like in the long term here that if you're like number one Bethesda fan person on earth, you should probably get an Xbox enabled shaped device in some way,
which
whatever they
want to
call that.
You're right though, it is kind of like it's crazy to be talking about, especially Starfield. Like, we understand the pedigree behind it, but what else have we got to go on? Like, we've got what, like a logo?
Yeah.
You know, and no one's gonna be like, damn, we'll get to play Starfield. Like, it's just, you know, no one knows what that game is even. So it's
but Lucy, the logo, like the T and the L, they both turn into worms. Like, it's like lowly worm, they become a circle. That's I think you're not giving this logo enough credit personally.
That's fair. I can't wait for it to just basically be Fallout Shelter in space, though. it really crush everyone's dreams. Mm-hmm. It is one that I think, you know, as you both were saying, the news of today doesn't change anything that we knew about 6 months ago, especially for PlayStation fans. And I mostly wanted to bring it up to, like, it is a major shift. It is, you know, one of the big three publishers or console owners acquiring a massive third party publisher. It will have huge implications. Nothing has changed that we know of right now, but it will be an interesting thing to, I think, see as this draws out throughout the generation, because I think we can see the pieces of what Microsoft is doing for 5 years from now. I can't necessarily say the same about PlayStation. I can see what they're doing in the next year or two, but beyond that, beyond is a bit of a mystery to me. And it's interesting to have those different viewpoints, because often we don't get that in generations. Often it's kind of like both are operating on very similar planes and focuses.
The ideal universe for every video game consumer on planet Earth is that every console manufacturer, software developer is in a constant neck and neck battle. That is the best thing that can possibly happen. The second somebody gets, you know, big and complacent and they look like Bib Fortuna at the end of The Mandalorian, spoilers, you don't want anything like that to happen. You want this just constantly breathing on each other's necks, scaring the crap out of each other, because it just means better stuff for all of us. Like, that's all we want.
The complacency is how you get giant enemy crabs, and you'll work two jobs to get a PS3, which is not a Sony I think any of us want to see. So I'm excited for how it will motivate, you know, the sales pushes. But at the end of the day, again, just as a reminder, these are two companies making moves that will best benefit them, their bottom line at the end of the day. So it'll be really interesting to see how that all plays out.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Very briefly, just to jump between stories, because it's a bit of a grab bag of stuff this week. I did want to mention, doesn't confirm any sort of new project or anything, but Brian, you had pointed this out in the Beyond group. Walt Williams seems to have announced he is joining Insomniac Games based on a tweet holding up an Insomniac Games placard. So either joining Insomniac Games or is out on a mission to hunt them all down. I don't know which, but anyway, Walt Williams,
or he's just contracting for them for a game.
Or that. But in some way, Walt Williams will be working on a project for them. Just for anyone who doesn't know Walt, and the reason I wanted to bring it up was he's written on projects like Star Wars Squadron, Star Wars Battlefront 2, was one of the writers behind Spec Ops: The Line, and a few other projects as well. A really great writer, interesting games in that back catalog. None of which immediately scream Spider-Man or Ratchet and Clank to me. And so there's the hope in the back of my head of like, oh, what if it's a weird Resistance reboot? What if it's a really strange take on Sunset Overdrive, like, or something brand new? Like, there could be any untold number of things, but it's an exciting move to me in terms of, I think Insomniac is so very prolific. They are putting out a surprising number of games as the years go on. And I'm just generally excited by what they have in store, both known and unknown. Brian, you had brought this up in the Beyond group. I didn't know if there was anything about Walt's like past games you wanted to mention.
No, he's been on the show before. He's written books, which are great. You should check out. To me, this felt like a like Spider-Man shaped DLC thing that we don't know anything about yet, like whether that's Miles Morales or Peter Parker, something like another sort of Miles Morales sized adventure in that universe. It feels right to me. I feel like my brain did the same thing as yours, Jonathan, where I was just like, he's written games with guns, so obviously it's got to be Resistance. Like, yeah, get the soldier guy on the shooty game. But there's a lot of nuance to the stuff he makes, and he's generally like I think he's like a very sweet man, despite the fact that he writes a lot of these stories that get grim and dark. If you're listening to this, hi, Walt, you're a good person. I hope it's Spider-Man. Maybe that's just my brain being like, writer that you love and video game series that you love, put them together and get more of those things. That's my peanut butter and chocolate right there.
Also, I think that writing for Spider-Man would be such a treat for any writer. Like, yeah. I think that universe, the tone of the Insomniac games is so kind of fun and warm and interesting. And they've obviously let previous writers play around in that space and, you know, throw out ideas. And those ideas have been onboarded So I think that there's like, it's a great place for any writer to end up in.
Yeah. Totally. You're absolutely right, Lucy, with the tone of it. And especially they've let it be malleable enough too that they can go in some strange places. Like I could immediately see sort of the psychological stuff he's done before with like Spec Ops and whatnot and apply that to a Mysterio arc in Spider-Man or something where it gets really psychologically weird and interesting, but also just to play around in the world of Spider-Man. There are so many opportunities there. I don't think we're in for a shortage of Spider-Man content from Insomniac in the years to come. Whatever Spider-Man he is or isn't writing for, we're excited definitely to see what comes from Insomniac. Brian, you bringing up the sort of like the Miles Morales-sized adventure was sort of an interesting one for me because somewhat tying into that, I wanted to briefly bring up, just as for anyone who might not know, there's a new God of War comic series called God of War Fallen God, which I believe comes out this week or the week after. I'm trying to find the release date. But it's coming out soon and essentially is helping to bridge the gap between, the end of the original God of War series and the horror God of War that we had. I imagine it won't tell every bit of that story, but it's helping to fill in the gaps of what was seen there after God of War 3. And for me, that's something that like I in part would love a game set in that era that was a smaller, like expand alone, if that's the word that Sony wants to use going forward, type of game. I don't know about both of you, but like we've talked a little bit about it on the show before. I really love that cadence of smaller games with these larger games. I think mm-hmm. there's something to it that allows for experimentation that we may not get otherwise.
I hear you. I think that a lot of these, these companies really do want to like push into like lean into the whole transmedia thing and really kind of put their stamp on all sorts of. We're seeing it all over, we're seeing it like with the Last of Us series, with the Halo TV series, there's always been like tie-in novels and comic books and stuff like that. Like I'm sure something like that would have been considered and then they'd gone, okay, well this is, better suited as a comic series rather than a game. Like I think all of us, like a lot of us who spend more time playing the video games than reading the tie-in novels are like, damn, that would have been great. But I do understand like the decision making behind, just totally. Expanding out this universe, right?
Yeah.
Like getting the tendrils out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is something that almost every medium is experiencing and experimenting with right now, which is super cool. Because like Lucy alluded to, like there was a very long time that if your story concluded in like a comic, it meant your show got canceled. Like there was, that was basically like this pit of hell where it's just like, well, we're not going to get a fourth season, but don't worry. There's like a webisode or like a web comic, like a Happy Meal prize, like this, something like that. Whereas I think over the last few years, people have been like, what is a movie? What is a TV show? Like Zack Snyder's Justice League is a 4-hour movie. Euphoria is a television show that got two individual episode spinoffs. Breaking Bad is a 6-season television show that got a movie spinoff and a prequel season. Like the idea of being able to tell stories in different ways is super cool to me. And Kratos and Atreus are phenomenal characters, as are every single supporting character in that game. And so, yeah, sure. I want more of it. Like, if that means they want to tell a story in a comic and then tell another story in like a 6-hour game or a 25-hour game or a movie or a TV show and have it all interconnect, I dig it. I totally dig it.
Yeah, you're totally right. There's a lot more fluidity to where those things go. You hit the nail on the head in terms of the like, yeah, usually a tie-in comic meant things didn't go well for the actual flagship thing. That's it's not the case anymore. I mean, like even it's behind me, but that's the first issue of one of the new Star Wars High Republic lines, and like that is a thing that only right now exists in books and comics. It's not in any of the movies or TV shows, and it's one of my favorite Star Wars things in a long time. Like the High Republic is such a cool era and there's so much cool stuff there, but I'm glad they've chosen these mediums to start it in because it really does, it allows for a different relationship with the reader in this case. And I think you can find where those places make sense. You're both totally right. I guess it's just me being wanting to work out
of work. Which is totally fair.
I hope I'm not alone in that. I would imagine, given how excited people are for Ragnarok. But no, yeah, I totally agree that now it feels like these things aren't a like, well, you know, we had this leftover idea, let's put it in a comic. It is, we have a good idea, it makes sense as a comic, let's do it there. It makes sense as a tie-in book. I have the God of War journal that is essentially Atreus's journal in the game with like new little bits and details of lore. That makes more sense there than a, you know, deluxe edition of the game, I guess, where they add in a few more VO lines. Like it's,
I like, which Deluxe edition? I Deluxe like that a lot. Edition. That's better than Expand Alone. I like, yeah. I like Deluxe
edition. Deluxe edition. Yeah.
If you, far more dumb.
If you need a clumsy portmanteau, just let me talk long enough and I'll mix up two words. And that's how I do marketing.
I'm into that.
Anyway, God of War, I just want Ragnarok, but you know, take your time, please. I just am excited. Anyway, moving on from that, in the continued grab bag. See, I can't speak today. In terms of PlayStation news, did want to briefly just mention, cause we had talked a little bit, honestly, in passing, cause it came out the State of Play week in terms of PSVR 2 happening, but PlayStation did announce, is it six more games coming to PSVR? It includes the next game from the creators of Arizona Sunshine. Oh my God, Jonathan, learn to speak. After the Fall is a new co-op first-person shooter, a JRPG-inspired MMO called Zenith. I Expect You to Die 2, The Spy and the Liar, which is a lot of a title, which I appreciate. A PSVR action-adventure game called Fracked. A survival game called Song in the Smoke, which looks really cool, and Doom 3 VR edition for PSVR. We've seen PlayStation do these sort of like PSVR game announcement dumps. This seems to kind of be like the rollout of PSVR news. And none of these in particular was like, oh, here's like a, you know, second coming of PSVR or third or fourth coming of PSVR. At least for me, it's nice to see that there's still support going, even though they have announced the future of PSVR. Like, we are going to get PSVR 2, but it's not going to be absolute silence in the months between. Mm-hmm. We had talked a couple weeks back when the PSVR 2 news came out, and so I wanted to just reflect on that a little bit more since we didn't take too much time. But PSVR is in an interesting place, and I forget who said it, but it is almost even a little bit surprising that they are continuing that support given how much of a smaller install base it has compared to the larger, you know, PlayStation audience. Mm-hmm. I wanted to take sort of this opportunity of these new games, not necessarily to like go through each one of them, but I guess in the lead up to PSVR 2, are both of you expecting I'm curious of how much of a focus do you think PSVR 2 will be going into this PlayStation 5 generation? Because I feel like so much of the focus is on the DualSense and the PS5 and the games that we're going to be playing directly on there. Like, do you think there is room for PSVR to exist and thrive in the years to come, considering how PSVR did? That is my long-winded question. Brian, I'll start with you.
Yes, in its current iteration, it's kind of a pain in the ass. And I've said this before, but it's only gotten more sort of cumbersome with PS5. Like, the fact that right now the best and only way to connect your PSVR or PS5 is to like get multiple things in the mail is kind of a problem. I'm really, really happy that they are continuing to support this platform, and they announced that they are making sort of like a sequel to it. Like, that is awesome. That to me says that they're in the long term here, the long haul for VR in general. It's great to have a company of this size that owns and operates this many software developers continuing to support this medium that is constantly always seen as being like just on the cusp of breaking through. But I think Sony realizes like maybe it doesn't need a breakthrough. Maybe like we can service enough audience by reaching a small but passionate amount of people. I remember reading about attach rates for PSVR, and I think that goes a long way too. Like, if you only reach 10 million people, but each one of those people buys 5 or 7 games, that's huge. You know, that's super, super huge. Like, you don't really see attach rates like that on some even more popular systems sometimes. That said, like, I don't really see the need to drag out my PSVR right now. I'm glad that they're still making stuff for it, but I'm going to wait until that's like a little more cohesive. And there's just like one single wire and I'm just playing on PS5 right now. It doesn't feel like it's meant to work. Like, I know people are using it. I just don't personally want to deal with that level of hassle for it right now.
Yeah. I'm very much in the same boat. I have not, even though I have the attachment and the, to be able to use the camera and everything, I have not pulled out my PSVR since the PS5 came out, because just the worry of what that will mean for my cable management, which is already not great. is not an exciting, you know, opportunity to come up in the future. I'd much rather wait for this one chord future. But yeah, I think that point's really interesting in terms of like in some sort of acceptance of maybe this doesn't need to be, you know, as big as the PS5. Like, it is okay that it has the smaller base, as long as that base is really fervent, as it clearly is for PSVR. I do think it brings up that interesting of like, how do they balance their messaging and everything? Like, how much attention do they give to PSVR versus PS5, especially as the future goes on? But it's one of those nice things to see that we are still at least getting somewhat of a cadence of releases. Lucy, for you, I don't know. Do you currently have a PSVR at home with you?
Or is I do not. I mean, I've played, in the before times, obviously, played around with the PSVR in the office, but didn't ever buy one myself. Mainly because, yeah, I am enjoying a more streamlined future where I have a compact little console with all my machines in there, and I don't really like dragging out things. And also just because, like, I guess I was one of those people that was sort of waiting for the killer app or whatever, like, old school language you want to use for it. I've come around to the fact that there doesn't really need to be one, and there are some freaking great, like, smaller games on there, like Tetris Effect and Astrobot Rescue Mission. But I don't know when I'll make the leap or if I'll make the leap. I'm definitely still one of those people that's like, I'm glad that it exists. I don't feel like I need it, and I don't feel like I'm super missing out. But that's just me. And I'm really pleased that people are still, enjoying something that is really different and unusual and beyond 2000-y. It's a good thing, ultimately.
I'm like weirdly sort of philosophically of two minds about VR in general over the last year, because I fully recognize that it is this amazing thing that people can use to escape the doldrums of the, you know, four walls they've been trapped in for a year. Like, I went on this thing called Wander on Oculus Quest and went to my parents' house in New Jersey and just stood in the street staring at the house. And it's like a beautiful sunny day when they took the picture. And I was like, well, now I'm crying in VR. That's sweet. Because I haven't been home in a year. But also, like, since I've gotten older and become a dad and stuff like that, and, you know, been home with my family, my small family, for like the last year, my wife and kid, like, I want to be present in those moments. Like, it's one thing to play a video game and like pause it and stuff like that, but to just like go inside of a big helmet and hide as like the few moments of humanity are thriving around me that I have any sort of tangible interaction with. It's been one of those things where I'm not super interested in it, except for, like, you know, looking at my parents' house on Oculus Quest.
No, I'm very much there with you. I think this past year, even though, like, as you said, it would make a lot of sense to use it to escape being in this apartment for a year straight, I've probably used PSVR the least since I had it, in part because, I wanted to still be present with my girlfriend and my dog and to just kind of be existing in this, and to go into that does feel like, goodbye, everyone, I'm, you know, kind of forcing myself in here.
It's a little bit like putting your head in the sand, right? And just being like...
Which is good. Yeah. The sand's great. I think we should all get to put fantastic. Our head
I mean, yeah, some, lot, but. We could all use a little bit more time detached sometimes, I think, for sure. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't need to log on to Twitter as much as I do. But yeah, there's definitely, I think, something to the hassle of what PSVR currently is that also kind of brings that up. The most VR I've used has been, you know, playing Beat Saber on an Oculus because of how simple it is.
I had a thing with my PSVR where, and I remember reading on like the subreddit at some point that this was fairly common, that you had to like let it like sort of warm up for a minute or two at the beginning, like, because otherwise it would fog out your lenses. And so I bought this like pen to like clean the inside of the lenses in the PSVR, and then I had like a little like wipe type thing. And so I would like plug it all in, turn it on, and then like wait 5 minutes and then go in there and be like, let me clean it. And I was just like, what am I doing? Like, I don't like, I understand that people love this. I understand that people this is their iPhone 1, you know? Like, this is like, it's, they're going to make better versions of this. I enjoyed it for what I could while I did. You know, like I saw an elephant piss in VR. Yeah. On PSVR once. We talked
important.
On the show. Like
important.
Very important. One of the greatest experiences. But it, like ultimately, like I'm like, this is, you know, you guys took a crack at this. You did pretty good. But like I've moved on and I'll wait for the next thing, which I'm sure will be infinitely better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And as the saying goes, it's worth burying your head in the sand to see some elephant piss. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Moving on from some of the news briefly, just wanted to also, before we wrap up, just wanted to mention, please go check out. I did an interview with Kenny Young, who is the composer for Astro's Playroom, which if you've played Astro's, the soundtrack is phenomenal and you've probably had some of those songs stuck in your head. He spoke to me sort of about the origins of the GPU Jungle song, which I think is the song, how that song came about, how some of the other the methods he used. He actually went back and essentially tried to use some PS1 era synths and things of that nature to get some of the sounds that were inspired by that era. Brian, I definitely obviously a music
sounds awesome
to go check out some of what he went a little bit into, like some of the musicality of it. That was even a little too much for like me to really know, but it was a really, really fun, fascinating discussion about a soundtrack that I absolutely adore, and some of the interesting ways that stuff came up. And one of the most interesting takeaways was about how, because it was a free pack-in, that kind of let him think about it in a way where he could take some risks, because what they were making was not the like one-to-one reason someone was spending money on a PS5.
So much sense. He would just be so much more relaxed, because it's like, oh well, you know, they're gonna play it even if it sucks, and it's like you know, it's not the reason that you know people are. There's no pressure. I mean, there's a degree of pressure, but yeah. Oh, that makes so much sense.
As soon as he said it.
If I ever make a game, it's going to be bundled with a console.
It's got to be a free packing. Yeah, absolutely. That's
the way to make I mean, what's great about that is like, that's all the more reason to phone it in, to be like, oh, they're gonna be here for something else no matter what. But he didn't. Totally. Like that, man, that's so cool. Yeah. I can't wait to read that, Jonathan. That's awesome.
The soundtrack's really great. And it was a great discussion. Kenny, if you're listening to this, love to have you on sometime. It was such a treat to talk. He used to... he composed the Little Big Planet series before. He worked on the Rescue. He was the composer for Rescue Mission. So this isn't his first Astrobot game. But yeah, really great talk. Definitely go recommend checking that out, because alongside that chance to interview him, they revealed that the Astro's soundtrack, the Astro's Playroom soundtrack, will be available digitally at the end of this week on March 12th. So if you don't need to boot up your PS5 to listen to GPU Jungle anymore, you can just go listen to the soundtrack.
Look, I've had that song stuck in my head since I got a PS5. It's already playing. It's already there. I don't need to hear it again.
I get it. But if you're looking for a reason to hear it externally as well, it'll be available there. Before we wrap up, though, briefly, did just want to mention anything we're playing of note. Brian, you're still on Yakuza?
Yeah, just falling more and more in love with it. I feel so bad that I waited until Max's paternity leave to really get into this game. But also, I am filling our legal requirements of having someone talk about Yakuza every single week, which, by the way, we haven't said Bloodborne this week. So there it is.
It's true.
No. Yeah. I totally love this game. It's really sort of like cozy is the word I would use to describe it. It is not a massive sprawling open world game. This is a tight, you know, individual collection of small scale cities with super interesting characters. There are no cars on the road that can kill you or anything. People generally don't just like shoot you in the head. Like, and anytime you have an altercation with somebody, there's like four guys on the street being like, oh, is it that guy over there? Let's go kick his butt. And then you kick their butts. It's great. But yeah, it's just like making your way around this small sort of lived in space, visiting bars and restaurants. Whether you've been in Japan before or you haven't, it feels like a real place, which obviously has a lot of sort of like wacky fantasy nonsense in it too. Not like high fantasy or anything, but there is like some sort of weird craziness in these games. But yeah, I don't know if Max hadn't sold you on these games and for some odd reason over the last decade, I implore you to check it out. I started with Zero and I'm really excited to see where the rest of the series goes. I know it's going to go up and down in quality and stuff like that, but the fact that it ends in Like a Dragon, which is like, you know, a turn-based JRPG, is like super excited to see where all that goes. So yeah, just sticking with that.
Awesome. And Lucy, anything on your end you've been playing or been a bit busy?
Well, I am late to the party, but I finally finished Hitman 3.
Nice.
And I did start off really bad at that series. I started off being very bad at it, and I was just like, oh, I'm useless. I'm just useless at stealth, blah, blah, blah. I have no patience, because that's one of my issues in video game. I just don't have the patience. But I think that, Hitman, once you get into its rhythms and you start seeing you become sort of like the Terminator. You start seeing the opportunities and you start seeing, oh, this is how they've designed it so you can do this. You know, it just took a little bit of time. And by the end, I was really, I felt like I was pretty good. Like, I wasn't getting caught and I was coming up with clever ways to do stupid shit. And it was like, I really enjoyed it. So now I'm doing exactly what Max did and going back to play all the other ones. And it's just, it's again, like, I know people have been telling me for years how good that series was, and I just ignored. And now I am apologizing and also having a great time.
Yeah, I was very much right there with you, where I felt the same. I don't have patience. And when I tried Hitman 1 back when it first came out, I was like, I the game is bad because I'm not good at it, but it was me just not like playing by its rules. And once you give it that time, it opens up and you begin to learn, as you said, like its rhythms, and it's so fun. Yeah. And speaking of other stuff that we're all late to the party with, as I mentioned, I think last week, I've started Sekiro and I got through my first boss fight. That game gets real tough, or even early on, but I'm really enjoying it. I know we're pretty much like almost at the second year anniversary for it. I remember us talking back when it first came out, and everyone on the podcast basically just fawning over it and me just being like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And I am still getting my ass kicked. You can see I've put a couple clips on my Twitter if you want to see me just really it's been a blast to play it. Like, and I've been doing it as a live stream. So it's been a lot of fun to have people, you know, watching and either cheering at my successes or cheering at my very embarrassing failures. But learning that game's rules is really fascinating, because it is so different from other Soulsborns, where I can't rely on leveling up as much. It is not the thing that you can rely on. So having to really learn the fundamentals of it, it has been a really fun experience so far with this beginning. And I know I'm so early in it. Like, I have no idea what's ahead of me. I've managed to stay spoiler free, but I'm really happy that I came back to that one and kind of like pushed through that pain point.
Okay. Cause I need to do the same thing. I gave up on that one pretty early on. I was like, I'll come back to it. Never did. But maybe now that you're playing, maybe I will.
If I can get through it, you can get through it, Lucy. I believe in you. It's there was definitely, I gave up on it when it first came out during the first flashback to Harada Estate. I just couldn't get, like, I was stuck at one point, was just like, okay, this isn't worth it. I'm not going to do it. And then it came back, and just using a few like tips and pieces of suggestions that I've seen from people, I kind of focused in on what made the most sense and was willing to take the losses as learning experiences. Yeah. And was able to push through a couple mini bosses. Honestly, the mini bosses so far, actual boss. I'm really enjoying it so far. It's a fun one. Before we wrap up, did want to read just one brief memory card story. Memory card, of course, is our weekly segment where you, the viewers and listeners at home, write in with your sad, weird, wacky, funny, whatever memories of your PlayStation or general gaming life. Those on the show, you can write into at IGN. Subject line memory card. This one is not about PlayStation per se, but because it tied into a past story where we talked about rabbits chewing through a controller, I thought I would read it. But anyway, John wrote into Beyond and said, I just heard the story about the rabbit chewing through a controller and have a very similar one. Rabbits must just love doing this. It wasn't a PlayStation, but a Super NES. I had taken it to a friend's house and brought it back home, left it in our basement at home for a couple of hours before hooking it up. Unbeknownst to me, my brother was letting his pet rabbit run around for a little bit. I went to hook up the system only to find the rabbit had indeed chewed through the controller cord. At the time, I lived close to where Nintendo of Canada was located, and they had a repair desk in their office. I brought the controller in to see if they could replace the cord. The technician stared at it puzzlingly for a little bit, only, what happened to it? I told him about the rabbit, which had him in hysterics. He went to the back and came out with a brand new controller in hand. He told me I could have it for free because he hadn't laughed that hard in a long while. Still have that replacement controller. Beyond and rabbits, regards, John. And I just love that, because it's just so funny that the person would be like, oh, how did this happen? Oh my God. Yeah, just take a controller.
I also don't know Canada super well, but that still feels like an incredibly Canadian story. Yeah. Like, down the road, there was Nintendo of Canada, and I just went in, and the guy was like, hey, of course you can have a replacement controller. Like, that just makes sense to me.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine that happening in NOA. Like, you just roll up. I went to Nintendo of America for like a preview event and like a shoot and everything like that. And they were like, you can't look at anything in any direction and you can't film anything anywhere except for the sign out front. And we're like,
yep.
Oh, okay. And in Canada, they're like, come on in. There's free snacks, poutine,
free controllers. Yeah. Like if I went to the World Shop in New York, they would be like, sure, pay us for a new one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lucy, you're absolutely right. It feels very Canadian, as cliched as that is. But John, thank you so much for writing in with that story. And again, if you have a story you want to share with us, write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read them on the show each week. But that's going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Beyond. Brian and Lucy, anything like watched or listened to recently that you want to plug? Anything of note? Everything's been blurring together for me.
I actually had something that I would like to plug this week. So a day or so back, it was International Women's Day, and we decided that instead of the usual kind of like, you know, a lot of people pitch the same sorts of things, like how difficult is it to be a woman in this industry, like, you know, how challenging, blah 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 blah. We decided to just sort of take a more celebratory approach this year, and we got two women on either side of like the video game space and the entertainment space of movies and TV, voice acting and acting, to interview one another. And we had Sissy Jones of Firewatch fame chatting to Kelly Marie Tran from The Last Jedi, and most recently Raya and The Last Dragon, which is apparently fantastic. So check it out.
Yeah.
And we had Kiki Wolfkill, who obviously heads up Halo Transmedia, chatting with Deborah Snyder, who produces all of Zack Snyder's DC movies, plus a whole bunch of other DCEU movies as well. So like both of those conversations, they could have gone really weird and they could have been really weird and awkward. But these two, all four of these incredible human beings, just incredibly intelligent, charismatic, and just like bounced off each other in the best possible way. And both conversations are really fascinating. It's not, you don't have to be a woman to enjoy them. They're really, I mean, you know what I mean? Like
totally.
It's not just like,
I just like the idea that it's like on YouTube. It's like, are you woman? Yes.
You can. Yeah, right. It's like, you know, like, I don't know what people think when they,
no, there are definitely conversations that some women have with each other where being a man, I'm like, I don't know if I should be here right now.
This is just, you know, these are just four professionals who's having really intense, intelligent conversations about their careers and what drives them, what inspires them, et cetera, et cetera. So please check them out because I think they're great.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to watch the full Kiki and Deborah talk, but I saw the Sissy and Kelly Marie Tran one. That's fantastic. It's such a good conversation. I cannot recommend those highly enough too. They're so good. And congrats to you, Lucy, and everyone involved in making those happen. They're really, really great conversations. Brian, anything on your end you want to promote, or just anything been digging recently?
We can talk about this. IGN is presenting the South by Southwest Gaming Awards this year, which I'm hosting with Akeem from IGN, and we are also writing the full shooting script together. So that's been a lot, but it's because I've never just written an award show, but here we go. But yeah, it's been super fun, and I will share that when it's ready.
Awesome. And then
little segments from that as well. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool stuff to share, actually. Yeah,
there's a lot of moving parts there. It's going to be really good.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, as I mentioned, the Astrobot review should be should be up by now. Surprise, a review for a game that came out 4 months ago. No, the interview's up, so please go check that out. And yeah, I can't think of anything else massive at the moment. But yeah, as Lucy said, go watch those conversations because they're fantastic. I cannot recommend them enough, and I'm excited for the awards. But other than that, we're going to wrap up for this week's episode of Beyond. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Brian and Lucy, as always, for joining me for this episode. And thank you to Red, our producer, for making this all happen. And thank you to everyone watching and listening. We hope you're safe. We hope you're well. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.